We're all souls having a human experience. That experience is a journey, and each journey is unique. It's through our experiences that we come together and unite. Join soul-led author, podcaster, Reiki practitioner, healer, teacher, and shepreneur, Kristen Aurelia, as she shares insights, wisdom, and knowledge with listeners. This show is dedicated to understanding the complex layers of human behavior. Each episode will continue to illuminate pathways and spark soulful journeys. After all, we are all children of God, one collective consciousness trying to survive the human experience.
Hello, and welcome to the Surviving the Human Experience podcast. My name is Kristen Aurelia, and I will be your host. I am humbled and blessed that you have chosen to be part of the SheWise family, and I'm thrilled to be part of your journey. I've dedicated my life to studying, observing, and understanding the many complex layers of human behavior. My experiences, both academic and personal, have shaped my journey, pushing me to share insights, wisdom, and knowledge through my show, literary works, and through community engagement. This channel is a uniquely created space for exploration of topics for all things human experience related. Each episode is specifically designed to explore and discuss topics that play a role or have an impact on our human experience. Topics span from health and wellness, self-discovery, life experiences, personal growth, healing, and so very much more. Join us as we embark upon the journey of awareness, education, information sharing, knowledge, wisdom, and exploration as we continue to evolve and become She Wise. Now for the disclaimer. This podcast is presented solely for educational and entertainment purposes. I am a fellow human being having a human experience and sharing information and findings along my journey. The views and insights shared by myself and guests on the show are the sole thoughts, feelings, opinions, and experiences of those expressing them. You are encouraged to research guests on the show to learn more about their credentials and philosophies as part of your understanding of viewpoints expressed. I am not a licensed therapist, and this podcast is not intended as a substitute for the advice of a physician, professional, psychotherapist, or other qualified professional. So let's get started with today's topic. This is a topic that's been requested as I've been out at different events and talking to different folks, and it's a very popular topic right now, and it is going to be exploring the narcissistic cycle. So this is a heavy topic. I could go on for episode after episode after episode on this particular topic because narcissism is something that is at the forefront right now and a buzzword in a lot of senses. So we want to be careful how it's being used. It can be used very loosely. So again, something else to consider as we discuss this topic. But I first want to jump into just giving a definition for narcissism. So I pulled the definition from American Psychological Association. I liked it better than the dictionary version. But narcissism, as defined by American Psychological Association, is excessive self-love or egocentrism. Okay, I'm going to hop over also to psychology today just to build upon that, because I felt like American Psychological Association made it quick and clear and concise. Excessive self-love or egocentrism. Very quick, very easy. When we go over to look at psychology today goes a little more in depth about narcissism, what it looks like. There's narcissistic personality inventories that can be taken that are studies and used in the psychology space with therapists and at the direction of professionals who can administer those and look at that. So that's something to also consider, is that, you know, we oftentimes can look at somebody and think, oh, this behavior exhibits X, Y, and Z. But labeling is, you know, something we need to be careful of and cognizant of. However, there are ways that we can protect ourselves and look at people and look at behaviors and just kind of get an idea of something we may be dealing with. And that can help protect us as well, because that's also something that needs to be considered. So Let's talk about a little bit in psychology today. They talk about how do you spot a narcissist. So I just want to read this from there because I thought it was really a good way to summarize. So narcissism is characterized by a grandiose sense of self-importance, a lack of empathy for others, a need for excessive admiration, and the belief that one is unique and deserving of special treatment. That I have seen that before, and that's a great summation of what it is. It's that grandioseness, it's that special treatment, thinking they deserve more or better than anybody else. Then they go on to discuss the difference between narcissism and pathological narcissism. So I want to read this as well. Pathological narcissism or narcissistic personality disorder is rare. It affects an estimated 1% of the population, prevalence that hasn't changed since clinicians started measuring it. This disorder is suspected when narcissistic traits impair a person's daily functioning. That dysfunction typically causes friction in relationships due to the pathological narcissist's lack of empathy. So again, lots of information here on narcissists. So you can certainly do your own research, and I encourage you to do so. I think that's very important. But I want to jump in. What I wanted to focus on today is the actual narcissistic cycle, because there actually is a cycle in how narcissists move and maneuver throughout their relationships with others. And so it's kind of fascinating, and I wanted to share it because if you're new to this space or new to this topic, or you've gone through a relationship where you've identified that you were in a relationship with a narcissist, then you kind of leave going, what in the world just happened? But once you understand the patterns and the cycles, it's a lot easier to dissect and understand, because there is a clear, regardless of the individual, there is a clear process and cycle that occurs that's used throughout. So I wanted to cover that. Also lay the framework to share that narcissism can be experienced in a variety of different areas and settings and relationships in your life. So in saying that, the first thing that, you know, typically comes to mind is romantic relationships, right? However, this is happening in the workplace. This is happening in parent-child relationships. This is happening in positions where you are dealing with others who have influence. So it could be happening in your community, could be happening in your religious organizations, political spaces. It could be happening anywhere. As long as there are people and people involved and relationships occurring, it can happen in a variety of spaces. So how you maneuver and how that works in the different spaces may differ. The strategy you may use if you are encountering a narcissist or working in a space that's got narcissism undertones lying wherever you're in, then yes, you may need to do different strategies and different techniques based off of the depth of the relationship you have, the frequency of interaction, your physical responses, your emotional responses, all of that stuff plays into it. So I just wanted to share that this is not just in the romantic relationship space. It is seen across the spectrum of relationships in different areas, and wanted to point that out. So let's jump in and let me tell you what these four phases are that I want to talk about today. There are four phases in the cycle. The first one is the idealization phase. The second is the devaluing phase. The third is the discard phase, and the fourth is the Hoover phase. And so they might be new terms to you. I'm going to walk through each of those four and just talk a little bit more, give some examples about them, because I think if you're new to this space and you're unfamiliar with these terms, or you're just coming out of a space where you've had a very intense relationship where there's been narcissism involved, you kind of leave your space scratching your head going, what in the world just happened to me? And where did things just come from? Because for somebody who's living, you know, their daily life and going about their business and encountering a narcissist for the first time, or maybe has encountered them before, but just hasn't really understood what was going on, once you've experienced a really seasoned narcissist, you really are scratching your head going, oh my goodness. And it can leave you disheveled, stressed out, depressed, wondering what you did wrong. How did things happen the way they happened? And so for that reason, I just want to walk through it because, again, it is a very intense experience. And I hope that you never have to experience it. But if you do, I want people to be aware that there is a very specific formula of how this whole experience will unfold. So let's talk about the idealization phase. What's happening there? So I came up with a couple of catchphrases that really, for me, sum up what's happening there. It's the in the beginning phase, also known as the honeymoon phase, the dreamy phase, and the shiny new object phase. I say all of that because in the idealization phase, there's a lot of love bombing going on. There's a lot of making you feel like you're on top of the world. The compliments may be endless. You feel special. You feel unique. You feel different. You feel like this person is building you up and they're putting you on this pedestal and making you feel absolutely amazing. And so for somebody who may struggle with feelings of worthiness or feelings of being loved or feelings of concern about rejection or has maybe gone through some really difficult relationships, whether it be again in the romantic space, whether it be parent-child, whether it be in the workspace, in an organization that you're in, the natural human behavior is to have a sense of belonging. It's to be able to feel a part of, feel accepted, feel safe, feel loved, all of those things. So when this narcissistic person comes into your space and they're building you up, they're feeding that ego, they're making you feel amazing. So internally, you're having this response where you're like, wow, they really care about me. They really like me. They really think I'm smart. They really think I am worthy. I am doing something. You're getting all of that attention. And if you've been in a space before in your life where you were neglected, had abandonment challenges, maybe you were feeling less than or not really accepted or felt like the outcast, this can be very, very different. It can feel, in some sense of the word, like an amazing feeling, like you really feel like somebody cares. And so when that's happening, the narcissist is excited because they've got this, what I refer to as, you know, the shiny new object. They're all excited because they've got this new thing, this new toy to play with. And I say that because, as I mentioned earlier, the narcissist is a very transactional person, but looks at things in a very different light than the typical human being. And so when things are new, they're also excited because this is an opportunity to do things brand new with somebody and experience things for the first time with that person. And so everything is exciting to them because they feed off of that excitement, that thrill, that feeding the ego, that feeling special, all of those things. So they're doing what the terminology, as I mentioned, is called love bombing, where they're coming in and they're bombarding you. They're maybe taking you on trips, giving you extensive affection. Perhaps it's gifts. Perhaps it's, dreams. Let's talk about our hopes and our dreams and all these other things. There could be some future faking that's built in there. Them sharing with you what they'd like to do, and it may line up with your goals and your dreams, because in a lot of instances, this is the phase where that narcissist is trying to get to know you. They're trying to mirror to you what you're looking for, because this is almost like a game of fishing, right? So they're casting that reel, they're throwing it out in the water, they're trying to catch that fish. And so as they're doing that, they're in the phase where they're trying to see what type of supply, and this will be for another episode, but there's different versions of definitions of supply in the narcissist space where, you know, you have your grade A supply people, which are your people that fully feed their need and really boost their ego, and really they get that energy from that person. And so those grade A supply folks are the ones that the narcissist typically tends to come back to. However, we'll talk a little further about this in the conversation a little bit later. When you are a person who is a quote unquote grade A supply identified person, because you're checking all the boxes for the person, what they're looking for, whether it be to make sure that they're going to get that promotion, they're going to look good in front of the boss, they're going to get that project done. As a parent, you're the kid that's making them look great. You're doing all the right things. You're in the limelight. They are shining because, you know, you must have done something right if your kids are on point or in that relationship. You are boosting that person's ego. You're helping with their job, their business. You may be stroking that ego, look good on the arm, so you're great arm candy. Whatever the case might be, you are in that space where they're trying to figure out how they're going to convince you that you want to be with this person. Because at this point, there's a mask that they're wearing. So they're not going to show their true colors, right? This always happens at the beginning of any relationship, right? You always present the best parts of yourself. Everybody does that. That's a normal thing. It's not until you get into the relationship further that the depth and the breadth occur, where you start to see the flaws. And I don't even want to say flaws, because I don't even necessarily think that they're flaws in people. When you find something that's less than desirable or what you would prefer is not there, that's your own perceived feelings about what is and isn't what you'd like to experience with somebody else. But I wouldn't necessarily say it's a flaw, but we'll use the word flaw because it's something that people understand. But in this idealization phase, it's really the courting phase. Again, it's the in the beginning, the honeymoon phase, the dreamy phase, the shiny new object phase. Everybody's excited. Everything's fun. But in this phase, things tend to move rather quickly. So when you're dealing with a narcissist, they go in really fast. They lay it on thick. They lay it on heavy. So you're sitting there and you're part of everything and you're going, wow, I can't even get my bearings about myself because everything's just so perfect. Everything's just blending together. It's like a Disney movie happening right before your eyes. Everything's in concert. Everything's working. Everything's magical. Things are so quick, like there's no real time to breathe, process, and dissect. So this is an area where I say, if you're new to this, and if you're going through this, pay attention, because those are red flags. Oftentimes, I think because it's so new and exciting, depending on what the experience you've had in relationships prior, or just the way you've been treated, or your own internal limiting beliefs that you may or may not be aware of, it's important to reflect on those, because when you get into the space with this type of individual, it can be paralyzing because you're not really sure what's happening. It's so different than anything you'll ever experience. And so that is kind of the key that I say look out for. If it looks like it's too good to be true, take a step back. Take inventory, make sure things move at a manageable pace, because again, these moments in that phase happen super, super quick. It's like, you know, you could go from, let's say in a romantic relationship, you could be dating for a couple months and the next thing you know, the person wants you moving in and then you're engaged and then you're married and then all things break loose and all of a sudden it crumbles as quickly as it came together. In the workplace, you know, you've got the new boss and all of a sudden they look through the lineup of employees. Who's the one that's going to make them look the best fastest? So they go in for that person and all of a sudden they're boosting the ego. Oh my gosh, you're such a great worker. Oh my gosh, you do really great at projects and presentations. Oh, well, come over here. I want you on this project with me. And you're all of a sudden inflating that person. And really, it's all about feeding the ego. And before you know it, project's over and they're already bringing somebody in right behind you and you can't even figure out what happened. With the parent relationship, there's a lot of research and studies done in this area too. So I encourage you, if you're interested, to further delve into some of the different topics and do some reading and some research and all of that, how parents who have narcissistic personalities or traits can be very interesting in the dynamic, especially if there's more than one child involved in the household, because there tends to be like a rotation where, you know, they move through each one and pin people against each other. And the other key thing that's interesting in narcissistic relationships too is to see that there's usually like a triangle effect, right? So the relationship is never really between you and that person. There's typically a third person and sometimes even more that are involved in this relationship. And sometimes you don't even know about that. And so when that's happening, there's another source of information being fed in. So the narcissist is literally playing and bouncing between to be able to continue to feed their ego, because they just can't be at rest, which is a very interesting thing to watch. When you're able to come out through the other side of a narcissistic relationship and really play the movie and see it for what it was, it's so clear. But when you're in it, it's hard to see because there's too many emotions. You're too invested in it. So it can be very confusing and conflicting. So phase two is the devaluing phase. This is the most confusing phase when you're first going through this. When you've seen it a few times play out, then you identify it immediately and you say, okay, this is a narcissistic, toxic experience here. But when you're not familiar with it, you don't know what's happened. You get into the what I'll call the getting comfortable, you're hooked, your shine is starting to wear off, the newness, the brand newness, the honeymoon phase is over. But it's not the typical way that you see the ebbs and flows in a relationship. In the devaluing phase, because you just came off of this, like, for lack of better words, this high from love bombing, all of a sudden, you're slowly starting to notice criticisms coming in. You're starting to notice being picked apart. Things that were praised earlier, or you may have been almost excited because this person noticed, now all of a sudden, they're picking it apart. It might be the way you dress. It might be the way you talk. It might be the way you conduct your presentation. It might be, you know, the way that you have a certain routine in your day. And they may say, you know, why do you do things that way? Or perhaps it's the critiquing of the way you clean or cook, or it could be pretty much anything. It just depends on what the person feels like targeting at that time. And this is where you start to have some utter confusion, because you're being put down, but it's sometimes subtle and not as in your face. So it'll start off very gradual. All of a sudden, you're seeing your perception, your self-esteem slowly declining, because now you're getting nervous because you're like, how did I go from being on top of the world with this person? And they thought I was, you know, the best thing since sliced bread, to all of a sudden you can't do anything right. There's a problem with everything. You're breathing wrong. You snore. You've, you know, got a blemish on your face. It could be the most minor thing, or maybe the presentation had a typo and, oh my gosh, the whole thing is a problem now. So you'll start to see the boosting of the ego of the narcissist, where they're having to place you where you're on that pedestal. They've got to pull you down to elevate themselves. You now see more exercising of control happening. You see more exerting of control. And at this point, it's almost like the game of gotcha. Okay. So in the beginning, we're love bombing because we got to convince you that you're going to want to be with this person who's got this mask on, who you really don't know who you're dealing with. They're just a really good actor or actress at this point. And so they've got you pulled into this story, into this movie, into this narrative, this fairy tale. And then all of a sudden, you're looking going, what just happened? You don't know if you're in a really bad Broadway play where everything just went from everyone singing and dancing and happy to all of a sudden the sun is not shining anymore. But it becomes a very confusing, very dark phase, because the individual who is not exhibiting narcissistic behavior goes from feeling this emotional high to this emotional low, this space of uncertainty, this space of confusion. And then depending again on those limiting beliefs that we mentioned, they start creeping in. And when they start creeping in, now your mind is playing tricks on you. Now you're trying to figure out, am I the one that's the problem? Did I do something wrong? Maybe if I just do this differently, maybe if I just get this project done a lot faster, beat this timeline, or perhaps if I clean my room or I take out the trash or, you know, whatever the case might be, my parent might be happier with me. If I get that timeline beat at work, the boss is going to look back at me again and maybe I'll be back on that list of employees who are in their purview or in their romantic relationship. Now you're worried because you're trying to figure out, oh my gosh, is my person going to be wandering off, or do I have to worry about something else happening in the relationship? Are we going to break up? Are we not going to last? I mean, all of these uncertainties start creeping into your mind, and that's exactly what the narcissist wants to happen, because the way for power and control to happen is to make sure that you feel like you're on eggshells all the time. Because if you feel like you're on eggshells all the time, they can control the game. They can control the rules of the game. They can control all of it. And all of a sudden it becomes a game of chess. And now you're just being moved around the board with all the others that they've woven into their lives, almost as if you're being pulled in when needed to stroke the ego, inflate the person. And again, when you're not able to do that, we just kind of push you to the side. So in the devaluing phase, it's about the power and control. So we're going to take a quick break. I know that that was a lot. We've covered, you know, idealization phase and devaluing phase. And so I'm going to jump into the next phase, but I want to take a quick break and then we'll come back.
Light up your world and discover the key to surviving the human experience with Kristen Aurelia. Navigating through life can be a monumental task. Listen each Tuesday at 11 a.m. and 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on syndicated Dream Vision 7 radio network for all things to help you navigate your journey here on Earth. Help, healing, light, and wisdom for all. Join Kristen on a magic carpet ride and discover the secrets to surviving the human experience and become She Wise.
In Kristen Aurelia's latest book, Recreation, Surviving the Human Experience, she shares a journey of a woman who embarks on a mission to heal the physical and emotional damage, as well as the trauma that has plagued her for the better part of her life. She shares her story in the hope that others will begin their journey to find their personal truth, move closer to the light, discover and live out their intended purpose here on Earth. Recreation, Surviving the Human Experience is available for purchase on Amazon, Audible, iTunes, and SheWisePublications.com.
Calling all authors! Have you been considering an audiobook? Well, look no further. Come take advantage of Dream Vision 7 Radio Network's unique in-house audiobook production, which includes benefits and bonuses from our radio station. Let our knowledgeable staff guide you to create the audiobook you've always dreamed of without breaking the bank. Check out our full one-stop service from A to Z, including the ACX process. Schedule a free consultation by calling 508-226-1723. That's 508-226-1723. Or go to DreamVision7Radio.com.
SheWise is your gateway to sparking soulful journeys and illuminating pathways in spiritual, healing, and self-help realms. SheWise Publications stands as a beacon for those seeking to share their voice. Beyond the pages in print, the heart of SheWise Publications beats with a passion for helping others connect to their healing journey. Together, let's navigate the complexities of the human experience and discover the threads that bind us all and become SheWise. For the full journey, visit SheWisePublications.com and SheWiseApparel.com. Journey to the Awakening takes you on a journey through many revelations of a child growing up in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, uncovering what really happened behind the white picket fence and how this continues to plague future generations. The book reveals, in a very riveting way, the details of multiple past generation secrets. Learning to walk through and not attach to the past will help guide the reader to beginning their own journey. Available for purchase on Amazon, Audible, and iTunes. For more information about Denise Claire's works and upcoming book signing events, visit SheWisePublications.com.
When we arrive on this earth, our soul is housed in a body. That body needs to be nurtured with love and care. In Kristen Aurelia's latest books, Caring for Your Human, You Only Get One Body, and Practical Tools and Techniques Workbook, she explores ways to care for your mind, body, and spirit. She shares her wisdom gained along her journey in hopes to assist others in proactively caring for their human. Because after all, we only get one body, and it's meant to last a lifetime. Caring for Your Human, You Only Get One Body, and Caring for Your Human, You Only Get One Body Practical Tools and Techniques Workbook are available for purchase on Amazon and SheWisePublications.com.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe. Relax and enjoy. Let life flow.
All right, so welcome back. So phase number three, again, we just talked about idealization phase and devaluing phase. So now we're going on to the discard. This is a painful phase for anybody who has gone through it or is about to go through it. This is what I'll call the you've got to go. Your value has been decreased. You're not good enough anymore. You're no longer the shiny new object. I need something new and exciting to entertain me. I'm no longer entertained by you. And so those are kind of my catchphrases for this one to sum that up. And this is where people struggle a lot in this phase because you don't understand what's happened. You went from being on this emotional high, everything's wonderful, everything's great, to I'm not good enough, I don't know what I did wrong. The person has made you literally question your sanity in the devaluing phase because every time you've questioned or tried to clarify what's happening, the person has turned it on you by using gaslighting techniques, and the gaslighting is laid on very thick. And so you're completely confused. You now have pretty much lost your sense of self, your sense of power. All of that has kind of gone by the wayside. So once you're stripped down to bare bones, right, the person has constructed you, deconstructed you, and then you're a mess at this point, typically. They discard you, throw you out. And I'm sorry, but I'm going to use this analogy. It's almost like just taking the trash out. Like, this was fun while I was consuming, while I was part of it, and now I'm just going to throw the trash out. And so this is where it can be very dramatic. It can happen very, very quick. It can be so confusing that you're left with your head spinning and you're not quite sure what happened. You know that they're was something good, and then there wasn't, and then it ended. And it's abrupt. And usually no explanations, no closure, nothing that really pulls things together, nothing that really explains what's happening. It's just the grand finale, the end. Very dramatic, very quick, very devastating. What just happened? And typically it's the narcissist that ends the game. And I say it's a game because it was always a game to them to begin with. So this transaction has come to an end. It began as a benefit for the narcissist because, again, narcissists don't get into anything without knowing the clear benefit to self because everything is about self. The lack of empathy allows them to focus on the transactional piece of this because they're really good at transactions. So if you're thinking in a business perspective, it's the same way as, you know, securing the contract, going through, finishing, closure, done. It's over. Discard, move on. And so during that phase, it can get very sticky if the person that leaves is not the narcissist. If the individual on the other end has literally realizes the other person figured out the game, right? Because initially, the narcissist is going to look for the unsuspecting one. They're not going to go for people who understand the game because then they can't play it as long as they want. So they're going to look for people who are unfamiliar with these behaviors, don't understand the cycle, and don't understand what the heck they just got themselves into. But when the individual, if the individual catches on and chooses to exit, then that is a whole different ballgame, because one thing the narcissist doesn't like is the narcissist doesn't like being left. So if the narcissist is left, wow, that's a different space. That is something that doesn't typically happen. And when it does, it becomes super duper interesting. And I say that, I've seen it play out in multiple ways and spaces. I've seen it play out in the parent space. And when that parent feels that the child, adult, and I've seen it in the adult space, not necessarily the younger children usually don't typically have the ability to break free or get away from that space. But in the adult space, as you see an adult getting older, all of a sudden they become much more ornery. They all of a sudden start telling all these stories and making these accusations because they've got to make that person that has identified their behavior and called them out on it look bad, because you've got to turn people away. This is all about conquering and dividing. And with the narcissist, you want to divide people. That's what it's all about. So you'll see in the space of adult parents, acting out or trying to discredit the child in that relationship, to say that they didn't see it that way, or that was all a lie, or this didn't really happen, because you need to do the smear campaign to be very messy on the other person's side to make them look like they're the one with the problem and not you. Because it's all about protecting the mask that the narcissist wears, protecting the face, protecting that space, because the biggest thing that scares them is being found out. Because, oh my gosh, if people know what type of person they are, that would ruin their image. And since self-importance is their number one, that's a huge issue. In the workspace, I've seen it play out. I've seen it play out very much. And it's almost like if the employee catches on, you see this in a lot of instances where somebody files some sort of complaint or brings up to management some sort of behavior that's unacceptable that's happened. Well, because the power dynamic in the employee supervisor realm or leadership realm is a challenge, because typically supervisors, leaders, etc., are looked at as being in the right, and the employees typically are looked at as not being at that level of, you know, perhaps being the ones to properly frame or understand what's happening in the workplace. A lot of times a supervisor or leader is given the power, and sometimes they're not necessarily deserving of that power because they're misusing that power. And so you'll see people that try to leave a situation, and before they can leave, that supervisor comes in and can damper or destroy that person's career. Because unless somebody's really got eyes on it and understands how narcissism works, you would think it's just a normal transactional experience in the workplace. Supervisor said there was an issue with the employee. Employee didn't comply. They weren't doing their job, because nobody gets to know all the details. That's how it works, right? You got to protect privacy. So nobody understands all the details. Next thing you know, employee is gone, no longer working there. But you never really knew the whole story, and nobody ever really took the time to really go into it. They only looked at the one side of the story, and then they say, okay, employee, now you go prove your point. So it's guilty until, you know, proven innocent, not innocent until proven guilty. So it's interesting to see it play out in that space. In the romantic space, it can, again, happen very quickly. And you could be in that relationship, everything's great, all of a sudden there's this blow-up argument, the world is on fire, and all of a sudden the relationship ends. And everybody is just sitting there looking at you going, oh my gosh, what happened? You guys were just on, you know, all the social media sites, touring the country, living your best lives, everybody's smiling, everything's great. But it's because there's this facade, there's this image that's portrayed. Nobody understands in the background what just happened in that devaluing phase. And so discard is very painful. And so that's why that space is, I would say, probably one of the most challenging ones to go through, because there are no answers. And again, as I said, a lot of times there isn't closure. And when there's that lack of closure, it can be very difficult to comprehend what you just went through. And you'll see a lot of people after they've gone through, and I've seen this in my own personal experience, a lot of people that have gone through these very intense toxic narcissistic relationships will need that time to go away. And while the other person moves on, because they do, they move on very quickly, whether it's you just hire somebody behind the employee, you just swap out one of the kids, or you just change the players that you surround yourself with, in the different spaces. You just see people move players. All they do is move the people around the chessboard. You just keep moving people around the board. That's what you do. And so in relationships, same thing. You're replaced before you're out. They've already, that narcissist, before they've got to the discard phase, has already found your replacement. They already know who's coming in next because they've been out there searching and fishing and hook, line, and sinker this whole time anyway. You just didn't know about it because they were really good at playing it off. So we're going to take another quick break before we go on to our last section of the cycle, because I've got a couple more things I want to cover, and I know we're almost out of time. So let's jump to a quick break.
Journey to the Awakening takes you on a journey through many revelations of a child growing up in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, uncovering what really happened behind the white picket fence and how this continues to plague future generations. The book reveals, in a very riveting way, the details of multiple past generation secrets. Learning to walk through and not attach to the past will help guide the reader to beginning their own journey. Available for purchase on Amazon, Audible, and iTunes. For more information about Denise Claire's works and upcoming book signing events, visit SheWisePublications.com.
Are you searching for a way to help create global change? Dream Vision 7 Radio Network's vision is to have an eclectic group of radio hosts dedicated to educating, enlightening, and helping humankind with positive messages and tools that enhance lives using different modalities and programs. If you would like to join our team and help illuminate the universe, call Deborah at 508-226-1723 or Deborah at dreamvision7radio.com.
SheWise is your gateway to sparking soulful journeys and illuminating pathways in spiritual, healing, and self-help realms. SheWise Publications stands as a beacon for those seeking to share their voice. Beyond the pages in print, the heart of SheWise Publications beats with a passion for helping others connect to their healing journey. Together, let's navigate the complexities of the human experience and discover the threads that bind us all and become SheWise. For the full journey, visit SheWisePublications.com and SheWiseApparel.com.
Light up your world and discover the key to surviving the human experience with Kristen Aurelia. Navigating through life can be a monumental task. Listen each Tuesday at 11 a.m. and 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on syndicated Dream Vision 7 Radio Network for all things to help you navigate your journey here on Earth. Help, healing, light, and wisdom for all. Join Kristen on a magic carpet ride and discover the secrets to surviving the human experience and become She Wise.
In Kristen Aurelia's latest book, Recreation, Surviving the Human Experience, she shares a journey of a woman who embarks on a mission to heal the physical and emotional damage, as well as the trauma that has plagued her for the better part of her life. She shares her story in the hope that others will begin their journey to find their personal truth, move closer to the light, discover and live out their intended purpose here on Earth. Recreation, Surviving the Human Experience is available for purchase on Amazon, Audible, iTunes, and SheWisePublications.com.
When we arrive on this earth, our soul is housed in a body. That body needs to be nurtured with love and care. In Kristen Aurelia's latest books, Caring for Your Human, You Only Get One Body, and Practical Tools and Techniques Workbook, she explores ways to care for your mind, body, and spirit. She shares her wisdom gained along her journey in hopes to assist others in proactively caring for their human. Because after all, we only get one body, and it's meant to last a lifetime. Caring for Your Human, You Only Get One Body, and Caring for Your Human, You Only Get One Body Practical Tools and Techniques Workbook are available for purchase on Amazon and SheWisePublications.com.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe. Relax and enjoy. Let life flow.
All right, welcome back. So we are discussing the narcissistic cycle. We're exploring it, and we've covered the idealization phase, devaluing, discard. Now we're going to talk about the Hoover. The Hoover is another interesting phase. So last phase in this four-phased process. In the Hoover, this is where I would use some terms, and again, these are my terms. This is how I sum it up in my mind. I'm back. Are you recharged yet? Go, no stay, no go, no stay. I want you back, but I don't want you back. So it's a very interesting phase. So basically you've been love bombed. You felt like you were an amazing, on top of the world person. You've been devalued and you feel you have no self-worth and your self-confidence, self-esteem has taken a huge hit. You've been gaslit over and over and over again. You're not quite sure what's happened. Then you were thrown away. Like you didn't matter, like all of this didn't just happen, like you've never gone through all of the experiences you did. So you're sitting there holding the bag, just confused. And then the person shows up again. They're showing up in different ways. They could be looking at your social media pages to see what you're up to, what your life is like. They could be calling around and talking to friends to find out what you're up to. They could be talking to family members to see what you've been doing. They could be, you know, scoping out other employees and asking what's happening, going to other siblings, seeing, hey, what's going on over here? They're doing some sleuthing behind the scenes, or they have, there's another tactic that's called the flying monkey. The flying monkey is a term that's used in narcissism where somebody else, the narcissist is basically gainfully employed somebody else to go and find out information about you. It's an interesting dynamic because they're pretty obvious once you figure out what people are doing, but it's the, you know, it's the family member who they basically have decided to say, okay, go find out what so-and-so is doing and report back to me. It's the research and reporting piece that's happening. And so it's a very interesting thing that happens, and it happens more often than not. It's just a question of how. And it may be very direct. It may be that the person, the narcissist, may reach out to you and may call you directly. They may, you know, text you or start calling and saying, hey, you know, how have you been? I miss you. Let's get together. Or what's going on? Or, hey, I've got this other project. Or, you know, it really didn't happen that way when you were younger. So can we talk about it? It's them reeling you back in. It's the manipulation tactic that's used to reel you in, to lure you in. They want to see if you've gotten your energy back, because after you've gone through being devalued and discarded, typically most people who walk out of a narcissistic relationship have taken a hit, whether it's financially, whether it's health-wise, whether it's emotionally. You've lost a certain essence about yourself that was there when you started the relationship. Oftentimes, you'll see people walk out of narcissistic relationships and situations that came in one way and they leave completely changed. doesn't mean that everything's changed about them, but something has changed about them, whether it's their interaction with others, whether it's their health, whether it's their energy level. It takes a lot of work to rebuild once you've gone through a very intense narcissistic relationship. If you've only had a surface one, then that is, you know, that's a good thing. But for those that have gone through really, really deep, dark, rough narcissistic relationships, it changes the person. And so it takes some time for you to get yourself back together. If you're going back to that grade A supply I mentioned, if you're considered grade A supply and that person wants you back because you've got some form of something that they need, or perhaps they're done with their new shiny object that they replaced you with, or maybe there's been several, and now they just come back to see, like, is there a possibility that I could go back and get this person to be on my team again, to put them back on that chessboard? You've got repeated love bombing happening again. Sometimes they reinstitute the love bombing because they got to lay it on thick to see if they can pull you back in. Compliments start coming again. Fake promises might be entering. There might be some future faking happening again where they're saying, like, oh, you know, let's give it a go one more time, or let's try this, or, you know, I really know you wanted to do X, Y, and Z in your life. And all of a sudden they're bringing back all the things that mattered to you. And so I share that because this is the phase where it's important, if you have chosen to say you don't want to participate in this anymore, you don't want to be part of this space anymore, then you have to be super strong. And there's a lot of tactics and techniques and things you can do to help you through that space. A lot of times people are kind of taken back because there's this portion of you that wishes you could go back and understand. There's this portion of you that wishes you could figure out what just happened and why it happened. And can we rewind that? Can we change that? Like, why did it have to happen that way? And so knowing that, you could be susceptible or open to the Hoover. And once you accept the Hoover, because that's their way of extending that branch to see if, or that hook, to see if you're going to bite, can they reel you back in? Once they think they have you reeled back in, they play the game all over again. And the phase can go over and they'll just cycle back through, and you'll go through the, you know, idealization, and you'll go through the devaluing, and you'll go through the discard, and you'll go through the Hoover. They're very clever, and that mask, they will let you play that game as many times as they can get away with it. So I always caution people, when that Hoover shows up, or you find people in your space that are asking questions and reporting back, don't accept them, because it's just ways for that narcissist to keep tabs on you. So being super aware and super cognizant of that, I think, is very important to protecting your space, your peace, your sanity, all of the things that come with trying to rebuild and heal after you've gone through this type of relationship. Making sure you go no contact is a really important technique. It's hard for a lot of people. You know, if you've been in a relationship or in a space, or have mutual friends or mutual coworkers or mutual siblings, it can be hard to distance yourself completely. But at the same point, doing that is sometimes the only way that you can save your sanity, yourself, your peace, and all of that. So you have to figure out what works for you in that space. But I wanted to share that is one technique that is helpful in that space. So those are the phases of the cycle that I wanted to discuss and cover today, just as a general discussion on narcissism. Again, if you're experiencing anything like this or have gone through anything like this, there's a lot of support and help out there for these. You've got, you know, your doctors, your counselors. Make sure you reach out and ask for the help and the support that you need. I gave the disclaimer, you know, at the beginning of the podcast to let you know that I am not a doctor. I'm not a licensed, you know, therapist or a psychotherapist. So please, please, please make sure you seek the assistance or help of a qualified professional if you're finding yourself in this space. I just want to leave us with a few thoughts before we conclude this episode today. Again, just sharing from Psychology Today. I wanted to share a clip that's really good about narcissism in relationships. A narcissist's desire to elicit admiration and praise, especially from potential romantic partners, often makes them charming and charismatic, traits that can rapidly ignite a romance or in this case, as we've talked about in this episode, I'm going to add this part, a relationship. So even if it's not romantic, but they're talking about romance. But their inherent deficit of empathy may prevent them from understanding a partner's inner world and establishing a fulfilling long-term relationship. It's nearly impossible for people with narcissistic personality disorder to truly fall in love and build a trusting equal partnership. Such an individual may seek to establish strict rules in a relationship and attempt to isolate a new partner from friends and family, among other disturbing behaviors. That happens a lot. You will see that a person who's gone through a very intense narcissistic relationship may have started with a whole circle of people around them, very social, very happy-go-lucky, lots of friends, and then at the end, you notice that that has dwindled significantly. Also wanted to share this piece from Psychology Today because I thought this was also very fascinating. Narcissists may show passion and charm in the early stages of dating, but for most narcissists, relationships are transactional. They provide positive attention and satisfaction to bolster a narcissist's ego and self-esteem. Also a very interesting statement. They've conquered challenges of securing a relationship. And so when they secure that relationship, it just is going to help build into the ego and all of the things that we talked about here today. So all of this is food for thought, because there is such an awareness and increased space to have these discussions and for people to share, people to heal, people to grieve what they've gone through. Because I'm going to be honest with you, when you go through these relationships, you do endure a grieving process. There is a time and a place where you have ruminating thoughts and you play this stuff over and over again. And how could I have done it different? And it haunts you because that narcissist has found the way to take your power away and exert their power and embed your brain, mind, body, and spirit with their spirit, which is not necessarily a healthy, good spirit that's there to be for your higher good, right? Everything in a relationship should be equal. There should be partnerships. There should be growth. There should be collaboration. And that's not what occurred at all in that space that you were in if you've gone through that narcissistic relationship. Two areas that I loved to go when I was exploring this and going through similar things myself, because I've seen it in my personal space across all areas. I loved listening to Dr. Romani Diversala. She is amazing in this space. She has a wealth of knowledge and information. And then I really enjoyed listening to the YouTube videos from Narc Daily. A gentleman named Andrew goes in and he shares a lot about narcissism and narcissistic relationships. And I thought it was really important to get the perspective from both sides, because initially, the research and everything I was looking at focused a lot in my space, because people in my circle, it was the women who were experiencing, were on the receiving end of these narcissistic relationships. So I love that he brings to the forefront, this is not just happening to women, this is happening to men as well, and having that voice to share that with others. So again, I want to thank you for joining us today as we discussed and explored the cycles of narcissism in a very general, broad perspective. I could go on at length about these topics for hours. I will do some more episodes and jump deeper into narcissism a little bit later down the line, but I did wanted to share it because it is a topic that's been requested and I thought it was necessary to come on and just have some conversation about it. So thank you for joining us for the episode today. And again, continue to be blessed and stay she wise.
This wraps up today's episode of Surviving the Human Experience with Kristen Orelia, the show where all things human experience related come together and are explored. Join us on Tuesdays at 11 a.m. and 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on syndicated Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Episodes will be archived on the Surviving the Human Experience Dream Vision 7 Radio Network website page and will also be accessible at shewisepublications.com. That's shewisepublications.com.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.